following message is by Pastor Mike Hammonds of Angleton First Assembly of God, located in Angleton, Texas. May the Lord bless you and speak to your heart as you listen.
We're going to go to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Just one verse. We're going to speak out of that. I mean, we'll share some other scripture with you, but our foundation today is 1 Peter 3, 7. This verse here, it's up there. Let's look at this one. Talking to the husbands. Live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker. That's right, I said it. Since she is a woman. Are y'all getting this? And show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered. This verse is in the Bible, and it is good. Ladies, say amen. We're going to elaborate just a little bit, but I want you to know, do you understand that the world today would not like me for reading this verse? Did you see what it said? Live with your wives in an understanding way as someone who is weaker. A lot of translations say, as the weaker vessel. I want to point out three phrases in this verse. Two of them we're going to jump by really quick, and then we're going to focus on the third one. And the first phrase I want to point out is at the end of the verse, so that your prayers will not be hindered. This verse matters because it links into our prayer life. Your marriage and your prayer life are connected. And I know it's talking to the husbands here, but you can read the six verses prior and it talks to the women there. This whole chapter is about relationships. And so our marriage and our prayer life are connected. The strength of your marital relationship has something to do with the effectiveness of your prayers. I'd suggest this is true for your other relationships as well. If you are abusing your children, don't expect God to answer your prayers, right? So the way you treat others has something to do with God answering your prayers. If you treat others in a bad way, your prayers are going to be hindered. And another verse comes to mind. How can you say you love God whom you can't see when you're not loving those who you do see? So how we treat other people matter immensely, even when it comes to our prayer life. So that's the first phrase. The second phrase, let's just go ahead and tackle this one. As with someone weaker. Live with your wife in an understanding way as with someone weaker, the weaker vessel. We're not going to go too deep with this, but I can think of two explanations for this that may help you. Number one, it's talking about physical strength, that the woman is physically weaker than the man. And I know there's some women out there that could whoop me. This doesn't mean that every man is stronger than every woman, but in the general sense of things, the men are stronger than the women. We're built a little bit differently, right? I saw a report not too long ago talking about the fastest known woman in the world. She has gold medals. I forget which country she's from, Jamaica, Haiti, I forget, Cuba, I don't remember. But she's the fastest known woman in the world, and I'm sure she could smoke me. I don't remember her time, but at the time of her peak, there were 300 boy high school students that could beat her time. Does that mean anything? 300, not even college level, 300 high school guys were faster than the fastest known woman in the world. What are you saying, Pastor? Y'all are better? I'm saying the male species is stronger. The world can't handle this. The world thinks everything needs to be equal everywhere, so much that they've gotten ridiculous in saying that if a man wants to enter a woman's sport under the title of transgender, that we should accept that because it's all about equality. Church, that's nonsense. That's ridiculous. I saw an interview with a girl and her mom. They are in a lawsuit right now. The poor girl's up for scholarship, been training all her life, and she came in third place in the race that mattered. She finished third behind two transgenders. Two transgenders who didn't even qualify to be in the men's meet. come over and dominate it in the girls' meet. Those that are pro-women are killing girls' sports. The weaker vessel. Church, it's okay to admit that men are stronger than women. A second possibility is that it's speaking of cultural issues. In the Message translation, it says this: live with your women with understanding, live with your wife with understanding. As women, they lack some of your advantages. Church, listen, men have some advantages that women don't have. Women have some advantages that men don't have. We are unique, we are different, and it is by design, and it is okay. Y'all act like you're nervous. Cultural differences. See, it was a different day, it was a different culture, and there was more of a societal advantage in that day of being a male than a female. But the verse goes on to say, in this new life of God's grace, we are all equal. Let me just tell you what we believe, the Assemblies of God, and here at Angleton First Church, so there is no misunderstandings. If you're watching, please understand, this is what we believe. We believe in an equality between the two genders. Yes, we believe in an equality. Men and women are equal, but not the same. You get that? We're equal, but not the same. Weaker vessel does not mean lesser vessel. It doesn't mean less intelligent. I guarantee that. It doesn't mean less human. It doesn't mean incapable. It doesn't mean unable. It doesn't mean weak. It just means weaker. You do understand that me and Paul, I'm the weaker one. I could put Paul with somebody else that I know, and Paul would be the weaker one. So somebody is the weaker one. It doesn't mean they're weak. It just means out of the two, the other one is stronger in Larius. Church, understand, set the Bible aside. It's only common sense and logic. Men and women are different. We're equal, and we're not the same. Now, the third phrase, our main focus, live with your wives in an understanding way. Another translation says this, dwell with them according to knowledge. In my translation, in my head, what that says is, husbands, if you're going to live with your wife and have some peace and some joy and some harmony, there's some things that you need to figure out. There's some things that you need to learn because we are different. She don't think like you. Emotionally, we don't feel the same. Socially, we don't relate. We don't connect the same. We don't think the same. Women think differently than men. You know that, right? And I would suggest that most women have a better memory. I've shared this before. Getting ready to go to an annual event. Annual, you know what that means, right? Once a year. I'm dressed. Teresa says, are you wearing that? Thought I was. You wore it last year. Wow. I wore this at the annual event last year. Everybody's not, are they going to know that? The wives will. So I always tell men, if you make a mistake, forget about it. There's no use two of you remembering the same thing. Right? So just let it go. Women have that mind like a clothes dryer. Things are tumbling in there. We're one at a time. We juggle like this, one thing at a time. Women, that clothes dryer, things are tumbling, and when the door opens, anything can be on top. Anything can come out. It may make no sense to what you're talking about earlier, but it makes good sense to her. And here's the amazing thing. When two women are talking to each other, they get it. In fact, women don't even have to complete their sentences. Hey, the other day, me too. And yes. And they can have a conversation with a series of half sentences. And they understand it. We're just over there going, wow, there's a gift going on here that I don't have. When a wife is talking to her husband, she can't do that. In fact, she has to not only talk in whole sentences, she's likely to have to repeat several of them. So we don't think the same. And as I said earlier, physically we're not the same. Emotionally we're not the same. We don't talk the same. Most women I know want the story. Most men I know are all about the headlines. Here's the headline. Well, what about this? What about? I don't know. I've been so guilty of this. I get a text or call somebody and find out a baby's been born. Hey, so-and-so had their baby. It's a little boy. How much do you weigh? It's a little boy. He's little. Less than 20 pounds, I'm sure. How long? I don't know about like that, I guess. Little boy. I don't have the details. Women are into the details. Talking also apparently is a sign of a healthy marriage. Because if you're not talking, she's going to ask you, sir, what's wrong? Now, if two men are together and they're not talking, there's nothing wrong. We just don't see the need to always be talking. A couple of grunts and we're good. But if you're early in your marriage and you're not talking, you better think of something. All right? So we're different. We're on different frequencies. She's on FM satellite. You, sir, are on AM static. She is elevated. And what we do when we don't communicate well, we don't understand each other, we just turn the volume up. You know when you're on AM static, turning the volume up doesn't help? It's frequencies. So we've got to get on their frequency. Men and women are different in many areas, and that is okay. We are different by design. God's in charge of that, right? So the man is told, live with your wife in an understanding way. Dwell with her according to knowledge. Figure it out. Now, why does he address the man on this and not the woman? She already figured you out. All right? She's the more complex. You're the more simple. She got you figured out. You've got to learn and spend time figuring her out. Last week, we had missionaries Chris and Lori Moyer. And they've been in China for a number of years, and now they're getting ready to go to Belgium, having to learn another language. She already knows it, but he's learning French. And they're learning the language, obviously, because they need to be able to communicate with the people that they're going to reach and minister to, right? See, it would do no good for him to speak perfect German and then go to a country that speaks French. You've got to speak the language of the people that you're trying to connect with. If you want to strengthen your marriage, you have to learn the language of your spouse. Title of the message is Learn Their Language. Learn her language for you, sir, and from you, ma'am, learn his language. So Gary Chapman, a number of years ago, wrote a book called Five Love Languages, and we're going to touch on those and add our stuff to it. But you need to understand that a man who speaks French fluently marries a woman who speaks German fluently, they are not going to have a strong connection, even though they're both fluent in their own language. You may be very fluent in your love language, but if you don't learn hers, you're going to have issues and you're going to have struggles in your marriage. You have to learn the language of the person that you're trying to connect with. So we're going to share five of them. And with each language, we're going to give you a point. And we've got something here on the table just to represent them. And what I want you to do, because just like your temperament study, you're going to find out that one of these languages is going to be your thing. And then the others, maybe a second and a third. But really, we need to learn to do well in all five of these areas. But you're probably going to be stronger in one than you are in some of the others. And so, husbands, you need to learn where your wife is strongest in the language of the five that she speaks the most. And you need to learn to communicate with her in her language. And wives, the same for you. So the first one is words of affirmation. This is a dictionary. So this represents the words that we speak. In this dictionary is thousands upon thousands of words. Good words, kind words, mean words, abusive words. All kinds of words. The dictionary is filled with words, both negative and positive, and we need to be careful to choose words of affirmation in our relationships with our spouse. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 16, kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and healthy for the body. And I would add healthy for your marriage. Compliments. words of appreciation or strong communicators of love. And whenever we're early in our relationship, we do this better. But when we get comfortable in our relationship, we let it go a little bit. And some of that's okay, I think. I think we need to be normal, but we don't need to get so comfortable that we become disrespectful in our words. I told you I'm going to give you a sentence for each one of these. And so here's the sentence for this one. Life-giving words communicate love and respect. Church, you may get comfortable in your relationship as you've known each other for maybe a number of years, and that's okay. But you need to hang on to life-giving words. You need to hang on to love and respect. And the words you speak have much to do with that. And the words you speak have much to do with the climate in your home. Proverbs 12:25, an anxious heart weighs a man down, but a kind word cheers him up. Proverbs 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death. You can kill the joy and the love and the peace in your home, in your relationship with your words. Man, I just wish we had more joy in our house. Pay attention to the words. Go back and inspect what have you been saying. Not just the words you speak, but the way in which you release them. The tone, the attitude. There are some that they are constantly angry. And no matter what they say, there is just, it's coated with a little bit of anger. If you want more joy in your home, pay attention to the words. Now, here's the thing about words. It's different from these other gifts in the sense that it's free. You don't have to go to Walmart to pick these up. The words are there. And you can build your relationship, you can strengthen your relationship simply by grabbing hold of the right words and releasing them. We can't let the enemy rob us of words that need to come out. And men, I know sometimes we don't like to be as emotional or as sensitive as, you know, that's kind of touchy, ooey. I'm John Wayne. No, you need to stay in touch with the tender side of you. It's in there. And maybe nobody else sees it, but she needs to see it. Ladies, if he lets you in on that, don't share that with your girlfriends. Oh, my hubby came over, he's crying on my shoulder. That's the last time he's doing that. It's a circle of two. It's a circle of two. That's you and him, that's all. There's some things that need to stay in a circle of two. Psychologist William James said that possibly the deepest human need is the need to feel appreciated. And words of affirmation can meet that need in your spouse and in your children. So, words of affirmation. For the second point, I'm going to bring my better half up here. She's going to share this one with you.
You know, as we started discussing this, and we kind of just decided to do this a couple of days ago in terms of tag teaming, but he said, what narrow down exactly which one? And it's really a good question because I think in different seasons of your life, your love language can change. And so I only say that to say that words of affirmation was probably more important to me when I had kids in younger ages at home. You know, when your kids are little and you're constantly cleaning up after them and cooking and washing all the clothes and you spend your whole day and you wonder what you did, but you know you worked all day long, you know, that's probably whenever those words of affirmation, husbands, FYI, when those are even more and more critical. But, you know, they're older now, and I'm in a different season, and so probably the one I'm going to speak about is my top, at least right in there with any others, and that's quality time. You know, life is busy, and it's so easy to just get used to running in and out of the door, hi, when you go by, sometimes you don't even see each other go by because you left and then he left, and so you never saw him leave and he never saw you come home, and, you know, life just gets kind of crazy. But talking about quality time, I'm going to use as an idea this hourglass. Now, time is often referred to or used or symbolized by clock, but the advantage to a clock is that it's just continually running. But the reality with an hourglass is it's the representation that once that time is gone, it's gone. You know, so depending on for what purpose you're using it for, you need to understand that you have an allotment of time in this life. And so whenever you give your time, you're giving yourself. I only have so many hours in so many days, and what I do within that time is what I have chosen to allow myself, what I've chosen to give myself to. So your time is vitally important. Our word, our phrase for this one is, time is the currency of strong relationships. A common phrase through the years is, children spell love, T-I-M-E. You know, we've heard that for forever, but how many of you know how easy it is to just kind of forget that? We get up, we do breakfast, we get them off to school, they're gone, we go do all our running, or maybe we go to work and we come back and it's quick, grab your homework, dinner, we're going to run through the fast food, we got to get to baseball, piano lessons are starting, it's dance lesson time, everybody get home, go get in the bathtub, you know, and then you collapse in bed at night and you get up and you plan to do it all again tomorrow. And so it's so easy for time to go on and not realize what you have not invested in just dealing with the day in and the day out. And so you are given an allotment of time, and what you do with that is how you are giving yourself. So if you want to invest in your relationships, you have to start by investing your time. I mean, even if this is not the strongest love language for you, this is still critical in the relationships that you have in your life, be it your spouse, be it your children, be it your employer, your neighbor, your loved ones. Investing your time is how you invest in your relationship. You need togetherness. That's why whenever Adam was created, he said, you know, it's not good that man be alone. And it wasn't that he necessarily needed a spouse. He needed humankind. Everyone else had somebody that they could relate to. You need togetherness. And sometimes togetherness needs to be invested for the moment. Togetherness can happen. I'm together here with you now. I was sitting together with him a moment ago at the piano. We can be side by side and not be focused on being together. And you know, that's daily life. But you need those times whenever you've made it intentional. You need to be able to give or receive their undivided attention. You need to be able to turn off the phones. Maybe the kids need to go to grandma's or the babysitter, the local neighbor girl who needs an extra some amount of money so that you can just not be. And when you do that, oh my goodness, try not to talk about the kids the whole time. Okay, how many of you have done that? Years ago, we decided to have a date night. And the kids were, I think we had all four of them, but they were all younger. And so we're going to go watch a movie. Well, do you know we went to watch Cheaper by the Dozen? Seriously? So seriously, we went to watch, I mean, in the first 10 minutes, the opening scene of that is the morning. Everybody's running chaotic. Food's flying everywhere. Everybody's hollering. Somebody can't find their shoes. Somebody's homework is lost. And we look at each other and went, what did we do? I mean, it was a funny story. But I will tell you, you need some undivided attention apart from the kids, apart from the phones. And if you are married to or you're trying to connect with a person who is a quality time love language, nothing, hear me, nothing will hurt them more than for them to be sharing with you and realizing you're only half paying attention. So here's the thing. Moments will happen. They're going to catch you as you're trying to go in the door and you're having to make sure and go turn this on because it hadn't been on all day or whatever. And they're walking by you, talk, and you're not hearing anything. You know, those days, those times happen as well. That's when you go, hun, I want to hear what you have to say, but you need to give me 5 minutes. If you just give me 5 minutes, then you can fill me in on everything that just happened with your child or your mother or whatever. But be intentional. Some people need to know that you care enough to listen to what they have to say. And so if you can't do that in that moment, and this is really good at any time. I have not forgotten about you, Rob. Rob said something to me earlier about a special, and we're in worship personal. And I went, Rob, catch me in just a little while, and we will talk about it. Because I know in that moment I can't be focused because I'm on another plan. But the thing is if I don't come back to him, I just blew him off. Don't blow him off, but come back and give that undivided attention. They need quality conversation. Maintain eye contact. Don't do something else at the same time. They need to know that you're listening and that you're listening between the lines. Listen for their feelings. Watch their body language. If they're talking to you and their arms are crossed and their body's turned the other direction, then there's a hardcore thing happening here that somehow you're going to need to break through. They are often interested in being understood. They want empathy and they want compassion, not a fix. Now, here's the problem. You got the fix. Okay, my husband has told a story through the years, time and time again, about how he did this with me. And I kid you not, in the last 2 months, I did it to somebody else. And I didn't even catch it till probably 2 hours later. And I went, I just did it. Someone was talking to me and it brought up something that was emotional and it just disturbed them. And I knew the answers. Well, you don't have to worry about that. And that's not a big deal. And that's going to happen that way. And I'm just giving them the what for. Everything that, yeah. And just kind of, what a big deal. And you know what? I gave a lot of great advice. But it probably, and that person, in hindsight, you could see them just close right up. And I had to go to them later on and say, I am so sorry. There can be some things that can be helpful, but in that moment, you just needed me to hear you. And I'm so sorry that I didn't listen in that moment. So listen for them. A recent study seems to indicate that people will often listen to you for 17 seconds before they're ready to interrupt you. That's a scary thought. Quality time doesn't have to be expensive. Sometimes you just need to invite them to come along. You're working on a project and you need to go to Lowe's. Hey, hun, you want to go to Lowe's with me? She might say, nah. But she might say, yeah, let me grab my coat. And you just be together. It doesn't always have to be a big deal. Just be together. Table time is one of the best places that you can have quality time. You have their undivided attention, assuming phones are set aside. You are knee to knee, face to face. Unless they turn their chair another way, they're looking directly at you. Capitalize on your meal times together to have quality time with your family, your spouse. Life is a vapor, James tells us. And Proverbs says that we're not promised tomorrow. So let me close this part with this quote. It's from Charles Hummel, and he has a booklet called The Tyranny of the Urgent. It came out back in the 1960s, but it's really profound in terms of priorities. But he said this: we live in constant tension between the urgent and the important. The problem is that many important tasks, need not be done today or even this week. Extra hours of prayer and Bible study, maybe a visit to an elderly friend, reading an important book. These activities can usually wait a little longer. But often urgent, though less important, tasks call for immediate response. Endless demands pressure every waking hour. Sometimes the urgent is not as urgent as it feels, and the important is getting lost in the process. And time, you've only got a certain amount of it, so use it wisely.
That was awesome. My favorite part was the part where she did to somebody what I did to her. I thought that was good. I enjoyed that. Love language number three is simply this. It's the giving of gifts. She just talked about quality time, which is probably the best gift that we could give anybody. But it's not the only gift that we should give, right? So gift giving. And it doesn't have to always be expensive, but gifts. Gifts are symbols and expressions of love. Most wedding ceremonies will have an exchanging of rings, a gift, something that we give to the other person. And the sentence for this one, a gift says, I was thinking of you. See, we've heard that phrase, it's the thought that counts. And some people have taken that phrase and abused this by saying, I didn't get you anything, but I thought about it, and it's the thought that counts. No, what that's saying is if the gift has value, but really the more valuable thing behind the gift is that you went out and got the gift because you couldn't get the gift without thinking about the person you were getting the gift for. So you thought of them. Gift cards are okay. We just gave one away. But gift cards and things like that, they're good gifts, but they're not always the best gifts because it doesn't take a lot of thinking, right? I can't think of anything they'd want. Here, just give them a gift card and we're done. But especially those gifts where you go out and you spend time and you find the gift that is perfect for them, that meets their personality or their situation in life, meets their need or whatever, that gift communicates a lot. It says, I was thinking of you. When somebody says, here, I got this for you, you may not think it through in your mind, but if you would, you would realize that while they were getting that for you, you were on their mind. It's the thought with the gift that adds value. I'll tell you this. I'll share a little bit of my tender side. This Christmas, I decided it had been a while since I've gotten jewelry from my wife, so I thought I'm going to get some jewelry. And then I decided, you know, I want to support a small local business. I don't want to go to the mall. Now, you might think, well, that's the way to do it. Well, the part of the reason I wanted to do that was that reason, the right reason, support the local business. The other part is I just don't like going to the mall near Christmas with all the people. So there was a little bit of a selfish thing as well. So I went to West Columbia and went to some little bitty mom-pop shops. And, man, it was not crowded. It was good. And I'm in there, and I'm in this one store, and I'm looking at some jewelry. And I'm just telling you, as I'm looking at jewelry, I'm thinking about her. And, man, it just welled up into me, the gratitude that I have for my wife, for all that she does for me, for our home, for our kids. I probably don't think of that enough, but when I'm shopping for a gift for her, it forces me to think and to appreciate the person that I'm shopping for, right? So a gift simply says, I'm thinking of you. It's a symbol of a thought. This is probably, of the five love languages, is probably the easiest one to learn. Because even if you just do a little gift card, it can have thought in it, right? Somebody that likes coffee, and it's like while you're at Starbucks, you get them a $10 gift card and say, hey, I was getting coffee the other day, and I thought of you. So, yes, so gift cards are good. They have their place. But a gift is a communication of love. And let me just say this. You don't have to wait for special occasions. I think there's at least three categories of gift. There's the Hallmark gift, the forced upon you gift, the you better get something because everybody else is getting something. It's on the calendar. It's a day. It's Mother's Day. You must do something for your mother. It doesn't matter if you did something last week three times. You must do something the day of. Today, did y'all know it's Valentine's Day? It's required that you do something until you've been married long enough. And we'll leave that alone. I know some are there. No, you're never married long enough. That's because your language is the gift. I got it. Then there's the probably oughta category of gift giving. You had a spat with your spouse, husband, you blew it. You made your wife mad, and you're at work, and you're thinking about it, and you're going to have to go home. And so you're thinking, I probably oughta get her a gift. This is the gift that's put upon you because of something you did. It's your fault. Now you got to. See, the Bible says that a gift can pacify anger. Remember the story of Jacob and Esau, and Jacob cheated Esau, and then he ran off. 20 years later, he's coming back to his brother. You know what he did? He sent gifts beforehand. He said, y'all go ahead. Send a bunch of cattle, sheep, goats. Yeah, give him some of that too. And he sent a bunch of gifts, and then he came behind the gifts. There's a power in a gift. So we want to encourage you to strengthen this love language called gifts. So there's the Hallmark, got to, and then there's the you did it to yourself, so you probably ought to. But let me just tell you, the best gift is the just because gift. It's the flowers that's on a different day. And if you haven't done this, your wife is going to go, whoa, is it my birthday? No, honey, it's Tuesday. So the just because gift.
All right, good so far. I get to do one more, and the one I'm going to do is acts of service. You know, this is really a category that everyone, again, can do. I remember driving down the road. This was before we moved in the house that we're in right now. We were living on the south side of town, and I'm driving down Shanks Road, and I remember having the thought of how overwhelmed I was with some project. I don't remember what it was, but some project I was in the middle of, and I thought, I need some help really bad. And in my mind, I'm going through the Rolodex. Now, anybody under 20 probably doesn't know what a Rolodex is. But a Rolodex was the way we used to keep up with our contacts before there were cell phones. So in my mind, I'm running through the Rolodex of names. It was that far back. And trying to think of who I could call to be a help. And you know, I didn't even give anybody an opportunity to say no. I just assumed that they couldn't. But in that moment, I remember thinking, wow, have we become so busy that in this moment I'm in such need of help and everyone is too busy. Now, again, I made that assumption for everyone else. There may have been a friend who would have said, absolutely, I'll come right in. But acts of service are beneficial anywhere. But in your home and with your spouse and your children, acts of service can be vitally important. Colossians 3:23 and part of 24 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. It is the Lord Christ you're serving. I keep that verse on the forefront of my mind often. When I'm in the middle of something because I had to pick up the ball because somebody else didn't do it and I want to go, I have to remember whatever I'm doing for the Lord. Whenever things are pushed too late, whenever, you know, I it's taking too long to do whatever it is I'm wanting to just throw the towel in, I have to remember I do what I do because I do it as unto the Lord. So the statement for this one is actually a quote from Rick Warren. And the statement is this: big opportunities often come disguised as small acts of service. Acts of service can be any number of things. You know, in the morning, he gets up and he makes coffee. He's up before me most mornings. And he's making coffee for him too. But you know what's a nice little touch that says I've thought about you? Is that he'll often get my favorite mug and put it on the counter by the coffee pot. Now, it wouldn't take me a second to go to that cabinet and find the mug, but in him doing it, it let me know that he was thinking of me. You know, a few days ago, I was kind of, the alarm had gone off, and I was kind of scrambling around trying to get up and get going, and I needed to go get in the shower. And one of my morning routines is, I didn't always, so I can't take loads of credit, but my practice now is actually to make the bed every day. It's a good practice. I didn't do it forever, but I'm in a good habit of it right now. So making the bed, making sure that the room looks put together, even if the rest of the room's a mess, the bed at least looks good. Well, that morning, I'm like just stumbling off to the bathroom. I'm going to get a shower, and maybe after the shower, I'll feel like making it. Well, at some point in there, I heard him kind of come through the room, and then when I got up, I had the thought, how nice would it be? And when I got, you know, kind of pulled together after the shower, and I opened the door into the bedroom, and the bed was made. It was like, oh, thank you, Lord. I mean, really. Making the bed, it was a two-minute task. I'm not downplaying that. But in that moment, that two-minute task felt like a mountain. I just didn't want to deal with it. But I wanted the result of it. And in that moment, that was a thoughtful moment. And so we came through. I mean, I came through that morning and went, thanks for making the bed, honey. He said, he added this, did you see I turned the fireplace on for you too? Yes, he did. Yes, he did. So anyway, that's a small little thing. Sometimes just jumping in when they're in the middle of what they normally do and just say, honey, can I help you with that? Here's a recipe. Take care of this one while I'm working on this. It might be taking the car to get it filled up with gas. It's their car. They fill up their own gas. But you're trying to get ready and trying to leave, and you have a moment. And, you know, take it to the gas station while they're finishing getting ready. It's a little thing, but such a way of saying, I'm thinking of you and you're important. But it also is a form of appreciation, because most of the things that you would do in an act of service takes something off their plate. So it's a recognition of what they do that you're jumping in and helping with and appreciating them for that. So if it's done with a positive spirit, they are definitely acts of love, even no matter how small. But I will tell you, if you're gift, love language is acts of service, and your spouse decides to jump in and help with that meal or with the dishes or whatever, and they start loading that dishwasher, and he put the plates in facing the other way instead of the right way, and you fuss at him for that, you are at your own loss. I had to learn early on with kids when he jumped in to try to help that there is more than one way to do things.
That's
and if,
right.
If it's getting accomplished, let alone if it's affecting it getting done, and you need to say, hey, that's not going to work. Let me show you on this. There's a right way and a wrong way to do that. But the fastest way you can squelch your loved one in helping you is for you to be OCD in that moment and not let them be a help and be appreciative of the work that they're doing. Galatians 5:13 says to serve one another in love. So acts of service, it's not limited to your home. I mean, serve one another in the church. Serve your neighbor. Serve your community. There's lots of ways where Jesus gives us examples of ways that we can serve one another. Bob Goff is an author that I've begun reading. We're in the middle of a devotional of his, but I've read another one of his books, and he's just all about love. He has a book called Love Does and Everybody Always, and I'm in the middle of a devotional. I'm trying to remember something about grace and love, but it's good. But he had this phrase in there, and I thought it was appropriate. Loving people the way Jesus did means a life of constant interruptions. Is that not the truth? It doesn't matter whether our plans succeed or fail if the people around us don't feel wanted. Everything changes when we start to see interruptions as opportunities. So back to what Rick Warren said, big opportunities often come disguised as small acts of service. Remember that. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, because it is the Lord Jesus Christ that you are serving.
Awesome. Hey, the final love language is physical touch. I want to go ahead and just give you the sentence for this one. When it comes to physical touch is a way of communicating emotional love. See, we have emotions, but physical touch helps release emotions. And we're not just talking about marital intimacy. We'll talk about that a little bit. But if you're angry, don't you find yourself wanting to release that emotion by touching someone? So touch is a way of letting emotion out. Think about it whenever your first child was born or your first grandchild, and they come in there carrying that baby, or you walk into the hospital room and there the baby is. You don't go, oh, look at that little baby. I love that little. You want to hold that baby, don't you? You've got to hold the baby. Why do you got to hold the baby? Why can't you just look at the baby? Because God has made us to where touch is a way of communicating and expressing the emotion that is inside of us. Now, obviously, there's wrong ways and right ways, and, you know, that anger thing might not be the best way, but God has made us to feel. I mean, we have nerve endings all throughout our body and in touch. Isn't it amazing that God has made us like this? Nerve endings. I mean, God was making man. He said, you know, here's some dirt. I'm going to do this and this, and I'm going to put some nerve endings throughout the body. What's a nerve ending? You'll see. It allows us to feel. It allows us to touch. Handshakes, hugs, a pat on the back, a kiss, marital intimacy. It's all a part of touch. And I'll tell you, this pandemic has hurt us, because they've pushed people apart and said, you can't go to the nursing home, you can't do this. And we've got some of our elderly saints finishing out their final years all by themselves. God said it's not good that man should be alone. I think without doing damage to the scriptures, I could add to that, we need to have somebody to connect with and somebody to touch. The pandemic has been hurtful. Suicide rates have been up. Depression, anxiety, up. And it's because we are losing interaction with one another. I'm not saying be foolish and don't exercise caution and wisdom whenever there's sickness and disease and things like that, but I'm just telling you, we need each other. And there is a touch that has a power to it. There is healing in touch. Whenever you read the Bible and it talks about healing, it says lay hands on them, touch them. Often when Jesus healed, he touched them. He put the mud in his eyes. There was a touch. There was contact involved. There is a power in touch. If you didn't grow up in a touching family, this could be a tough love language for you. Because there are some people, it's like, I like my space. And I understand that. We're not trying to force anybody to become somebody they're not. What we are trying to encourage you to do is wherever you are with these five love languages, try to improve each one of them and bump them all up a little bit, right? So real quickly, since this is Valentine's Day, and we're talking about marriage, other relationships as well, but marriage primarily, let's talk about marital intimacy just a little bit. And I say just a little bit because, number one, it's getting late, and number two, it makes me uncomfortable to talk to you about it. But I'll say a little bit. Understand that sexual relations are not the key to to intimacy. Communication is the key to intimacy. Sexual relations can make or break, can enhance or can destroy relationships. I heard one guy say this. He said, sex is just really not that big a deal unless it's not happening. And then it becomes a big deal. And when it comes to this love language, I know a lot of guys are on the inside. They're going, that's mine. That's mine right there. That's my love language. Talk, Pastor. Go a little longer. We'll stay late. Touch is a powerful thing. But like a shotgun, you need to be careful with it. Because the thing that can enhance and save and help can also ruin and destroy. One couple was having some issues on frequency of times together. And so they decided to come up with a compromise. And she said this, we'll be together that way intimately on days that start with a T, Tuesday and Thursday. And he said, what about Taturday and Tundy? Today and tomorrow. It's okay. Sexual relations can make or break a relationship. Listen, guys, gals too, but especially guys, this cannot be your only language. No gifts, no words of appreciation, no quality time, no service, but here's my language, baby. If you're not going to take some time to learn her language and learn the other languages, you're going to suffer in this one right here. It cannot be your only language. You must learn to speak the others as well. And we'll call this one done there.
Thank you for listening today. For additional information or to call in a prayer need, you can reach Angleton First at 979-849-6112 or check us out on the web at angletonfirst.org. God's blessings upon you, and may His peace be yours today.